Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
G'day and welcome to AusBiz. This is The Call, 10 stocks picked by you, two experts, 1 hour. It is Thursday, January the 6th. I'm Andrew Gagan. Great that you can join us. Our two experts on the show today, Chris Conway from Marcus Today and Mark Gardner from Macro Capital. Welcome to you both. Interested to get your views just where we're at as far as the local market is concerned. Chris, of course, we saw a big sell-off on Wall Street, all about the concerns about where that cash rate is going to go this year. Where's it going to go locally this year, do you think, and how that's going to impact the market?
Yeah, well, undoubtedly inflation is the story, Andrew, and the RBA has been quite firm in saying that they won't raise rates this year. But again, it will depend on how inflation plays out. You know, we've got a global economic growth. We've got record low rates in a lot of countries, and we've got record stimulus in a lot of countries as well. So, you know, prices can really only go one way. It's just a matter of how fast. And the Fed overnight obviously saying that they're concerned that it's going too fast. So that might translate into Australia. We'll see how we go. But inflation is undoubtedly the story that we're all going to be talking about. You know, if people at home are sick of hearing us talking about it, unfortunately, they've probably got another 12 months of it ahead.
Yeah, or they're also going to face it at the shops too when they're trying to buy things. Mark, what's your view then? And do you think it is just as much of a risk here as it is in the States?
Look, it usually does fold out to, you know, filter out from the US. Overall, yeah, I think inflation is going to be a problem. We might see it subdued slightly as the supply chain issues improve and the shipping costs start to come down a little bit. I think it probably won't be enough to completely dampen it. But yeah, look, I think we are in for definitely we're in for higher prices. And, you know, as the anecdotal evidence was that a lot of people saved a lot of money being in lockdowns, et cetera, as well. So demand's going to uplift. So it'll be a pretty interesting year to see where all the money gets spent.
All right. Well, guys, let's get straight into it with our stock of the day. And we're looking at digital payments company Latitude. Off the news today, it has lobbed a $335 million takeover bid for Humm's consumer business, including its buy now, pay later and credit card offerings. Now, Latitude's saying it will pay $35 million in cash, 150 million shares for the unit as it looks to accelerate its BNPL strategy. The proposal still subject to due diligence from both parties, as well as regulatory and shareholder approval. So, what do our experts think of the deal? Mark?
Look, you know, the market seems to like it so far. And in a day where the, you know, the NASDAQ was off 3% and Latitude's not, if you have a look at the chart, it hasn't performed very well since it listed. So to get, you know, that 2% is probably more like, you know, like a 5-6% really on a normal day, but happened to announce it yesterday, for instance. So, look, the deal, there has to be some consolidation in this space overall. We're going to see rates sort of heading up, obviously, in the next year. So the credit card business and things might, you know, as people, you know, people deplete their savings that they've sort of accumulated with over these lockdown periods, that, you know, the credit cards start to get used a little bit more. But look, it was one that obviously tried to list about three times, Latitude. I think a consolidation in the sector is a good idea overall. It's pretty saturated, particularly the buy now, pay later sort of space. So they're picking up 5 million customers, 70,000 odd merchants. So, you know, and they're expecting it to be double digit EPS accretive pretty quickly. So within, say, around 2023. So, look, it's overall, it's a good move. The market seems to like it. And yeah, you'd probably just have to Probably just have to watch for a little while. It's been a really solid downtrend in this stock for pretty much since it listed. So I'd be more wait and see to see. I think it's a good thing that they're adding two with the Humm directors to the board, and then Group CEO is going to run the buy now party later. So there shouldn't be too many hiccups there. But you know, they're two relatively fresh companies. They're not, they haven't got a huge long history. Mm. So realistically, we'd be, there's possibly a little bit of inexperience there in terms of being used to combining two entities. So I definitely would probably wait and see for the moment.
Okay, keep your powder dry at this point. Chris, does this deal make sense to you?
It probably makes sense, Andrew, but the whole thing is pretty underwhelming to me. Let's not forget that Humm is the old Flexi Group, and Flexi Group was sort of the ugly duckling of the buy now, pay later space. That's reflected in the chart. I completely echo what Mark was just talking about in terms of the latitude chart. But if you look at the Humm chart from 2013 till now, it's gone from north of $4 to 90 cents. So you're having a business that is struggling in latitude since it listed, buying or proposing to buy the weakest, potentially weakest in the buy now, pay later space. So it seems to me to be, two struggling businesses coming together. Can they make a fist of it? Well, I reckon that will be hard work. They're talking about synergies of $100 million for the full year 2023 and synergies, in the years thereafter. But this deal looks like a little bit too much hard work for me. I think ultimately investors can do better elsewhere.
All right. If you hold the stock, though, what are you doing with it?
Well, I think if you hold Latitude, again, like Mark, you're probably just waiting and seeing. You're waiting to see if they can make a good fist of it. But I would have a pretty tight risk measure in place to get out of it if it doesn't turn around.
All right. Okay. Sounds as though you're both pretty much underwhelmed by both those companies mentioned. All right. Let's get into our 10 stocks as chosen by you. Our first one is Live Hire. This one brought to us by Travis, and it operates a cloud human resources platform focused on hiring process. Has two segments, a talent community and a direct sourcing business. Share price pretty much been sideways recently. Chris, of course, we've got a lot of labor shortages around the company at the country at the moment. So is this going to benefit the company?
I'm not entirely convinced of that, Andrew. It should generally. It'll be the rising tide that lifts all boats. But, I had a pretty close look at this one yesterday, and I struggle to see the company's competitive advantage. So, as you say, it is a platform that is designed to attract talent and at the same time attract companies to feed from that pool of talent. They do have some pretty impressive clients. Kane Burton, U Media, another obviously listed company, the Victorian Chamber of Commerce, ASICS, Komatsu Tractors, yep. So they have attracted some pretty strong corporates to that talent pool. But there's a lot of competition in this space. It sounds like they're trying to take the old recruiting process and put it online. That's going to be difficult. And they will have competitors, no doubt. And then the people that are going to Live Hire to look for a job, well, Seek is the obvious competitor there. So, like I said, I struggle to see what the competitive advantage is. I mean, they do claim some pretty impressive stats on their website: 96% placement rate, 67% faster time to hire, and 59% reduced cost to hire, which are all impressive. But again, this is a pretty hot space. And as you say, the share price has been going sideways for quite some time now, really since the start of the year. And I just don't see the next leg up. They're talking about the opportunity in the US. ZipRecruiter is the big company in the US that is probably already doing a lot of these sorts of things. So I'm happy to be proven wrong on this one, but I just can't see a way forward. And it doesn't excite me all that much, I'm afraid.
All right. So you're pretty much avoiding it at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Mark?
Yeah, I tend to sort of agree with what Chris has said, really. Obviously, it was pretty hot when it listed back, 2017-ish or 2018. And Australian companies don't have a great history of moving to the US. And and making it over there. Their AGM document really just talks a hell of a lot about the addressable market in the US, etc., and not a hell of a lot about the Australian market. So it's almost a little bit of a defeatist underlying message there, really. You can read that document and really drink the Kool-Aid and look at the numbers improving, etc. But overall, it's not something that as Chris said, it's been going sideways for a while now. Labor thematics obviously going to be pretty key. So there's possibly a trading chance, from a trading aspect, a bit of a chance that if the thematic really starts to heat up and those listed HR companies start to go well, then it might bring it up with it. So and it is fairly, in historical sense, it's sort of at the bottom of the range. But overall, I'd be a little bit wary, just with that general track record of Aussie companies moving into the US.
Okay, sounds like that's an avoid from you at this point as well. That's Live Hire, our first stock. All right, let's move to our second one, coming to us from Tammy. This is GrainCorp. Now, of course, soft commodities enjoying a major strengthening of price. We saw that pretty much during the course of the pandemic last year. That's due to attractive supply and demand dynamics. GrainCorp benefiting from this and its supply chain origination, processing and the like. Share price doubling over 2021. Mark, do you like it?
Yeah, look, this is one that the active division, which I run, recommended sort of back in August, September, just more so looking for some defensive names into that that seasonal weakness in the market. But I'm extraordinarily, we're through price target now. We're largely out, but I think it's extraordinarily high up here at the moment. If I was holding it, I'd be running a trailing stop on this. They've got, because bumper winter crops, we've got really favourable weather conditions. We've got drought in Canada and the US. The Australian grain proteins is of really high quality. So we're probably going to start to see decent inroads into Europe, etc. I think the Italians are worried about a shortage for their pasta flour and things like that there at the moment. They've got some decent interest in UMG, United Malt Group, which should really benefit from reopening. And going into the agri-tech, they've got good infrastructure. Look, if I'm holding it, I'm holding it with a trailing stop. I couldn't bring myself to buy it up here at the moment. I think you could potentially get yourself into a lot of trouble. There's other names out there that are really going to benefit from the from agriculture going well, so say like Elders or Incitec Pivot, etc. So I think this one's a little bit high for my likings. And looking at that chart, you almost get vertigo realistically. So just a hold from me.
Okay, a hold perhaps with a lighten on it?
Yeah, possibly a lot. I'd definitely be trimming some here and running, say, 10% trailing stop.
Okay, yep. Chris, obviously it's done extremely well. Is there more upside or not?
I think there is a little bit more, pardon me, upside, Andrew. I struggle to disagree with anything that Mark just said. The only thing for me that makes me think this one can kick on a little bit longer is that we, of course, have La Nina in the Australian summer, and that will carry through to early autumn, which means there'll be more moisture around, which means crop yields should continue to do well. And Mark spoke to it. Obviously, that ABARES report and the recent upgrade in November and record wheat production expected this year and into next year. So, whilst there's all that grain around, GrainCorp is the company to transport it and store it. And there's also the potential that ABARES, again, that's the Australian Bureau of Agricultural and Resource Economics and Sciences for anyone playing at home. Also potential that they'll upgrade again in March when they next get the chance to. So if they do that, then I think GrainCorp could kick on. But undoubtedly, like I said, I tend to agree with Mark. It is a bit ritzy up here. And just looking at the chart, it sort of gives you a nosebleed. So you'd probably want to have some pretty tight risk around it.
Okay, but so once again, if you're holding it, do you offload a little as you go?
No, I'm going to swing for the fences on this one, Andrew. I'll hold it full tilt.
Okay, all right. Take that as a hold. Good one. All right, that is GrainCorp. All right, let's move on to our third one coming to us from Scott. This is ProPak Packaging, a beneficiary, you would think, from the commerce boom, COVID accelerating that shift to the online purchases, of course. Chris, you're seeing more and more packaging, I guess, as we're buying online. So has that been a benefit to the company, and will it be ongoing?
So I agree with that theory, Andrew, that you just laid out. When I first came across the name, when obviously you guys sent me the notes of the stocks we'd be looking at today, I thought, oh, that's probably going to be a chart that looks good. Unfortunately, it doesn't look very good at all. I was trading at around 220 in October, now trading below 140, I believe it is, or 150, there you go. So the problem is that, yes, whilst there has been increased demand, and the company even spoke to this when they put out an update in late December, whilst there has been increased demand, they are unable to fill those orders because of labor shortages, capacity strains, and they don't even have any assurances from their shipping companies that the problems will be solved in the immediate future. And that, of course, meant that they needed to downgrade their profit before tax expectations from 7.1 million to 4 million in the first half of 2022. So that's the reason for the share price plunge. So this is a perfect example of a company of that double-edged sword where theoretically, you would think it's a packaging company, lots more people shipping stuff around the world and around the country. But because of the supply chain issues and the labor constraints, it's ultimately being a big negative for their bottom line. So if I was holding this now and I hadn't sold it already, I would sell it. There is some commentary that they'll have a better second half, but that is just the company talking about it. Obviously, you would need to see some pretty strong evidence of that being a reality to pile back into this one.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, you've slapped a sell on it. Mark, would you agree with that?
On a time frame, on a short term time frame, yeah, I would agree with that. I think the thematic's pretty solid. Obviously, you've got your Amcors and stuff that are just market leaders there. So, I think they would have suffered pretty heavily by being a smaller player that they don't they don't have the scale to deal or the leverage to deal with suppliers as much as what Amcor could do. So look, I think it will probably get a little bit cheaper. Like I said, I don't mind the thematic, and I do see the supply chain issues sort of starting to ease and things freeing up. So I'd be looking for an opportunity potentially to buy. It's a little bit defensive, obviously. And it's got a decent yield, and that's the sort of thing I'm really not looking for, looking into that growth sector too much for the next 6 months, just with stretch valuation. So this is the sort of thing, if we do get a bit of a pullback and you can buy it down towards those lows, just as if it falls away just in line with the market, it might be a decent trade. But certainly not yet, but look, I think conditions will improve, but it's probably just a watch at the moment for me. If you're holding it, I guess you'd probably want to be a bit of a believer, and I think you'll definitely get it cheaper. So
if you're holding it, do you hang on, or as you say, you're obviously
if your time frame's a year and a half plus, then you're probably holding on. If you're worried about the market pulling back, I'll probably be selling some now.
Yep. Okay. That's ProPak Packaging. All right. I think you'll probably be aware of our fourth stock. This is Telstra. Hugh bringing this to us. In fact, we look at its performance over the past 12 months, gained some 40%, and plus, of course, pays out a healthy dividend and has an ongoing share buyback program. Mark? Of course, it always regarded as a bit of a boring stock, but actually it's been performing quite well.
Yeah, it has been performing quite well. I think it sort of took a few people by surprise. We've been sort of scaling out over time, but mainly due to the fact that we're seeing better opportunities. So obviously they've got their infrastructure sell down. There's talk about them being involved with the NBN. It's defensive. It's in the communications sector, which I think for maybe the next 3 to 6 months is probably not a bad space to be in. I think the sustained rally of late, I think, has given investors a bit more confidence in Telstra, and had that long stretch of just continual decline. So management had tended to get things getting things fairly right. So look, I certainly would not buy it up here. I think you'll at some juncture you'll probably get it tends to have a bit of a pullback at certain stages. So you maybe buy a dip below around the 390, 380 mark. But look, if you're holding it, I think it's well worth holding for now. But if you're looking for growth, you'd be looking more. Our favourite in the communication sector is UWL, again, which is quite high as it stands, and we've been long Australian Broadband and things like that as well. So, which also very high. So compared to some of those sort of decent growth names in that communication sector, even though it is up 40%, it's underperformed some of the good and innovative names that have come onto the market in the last couple of years. So for me, it's just a hold at this stage. And again, probably something like a trailing stop again. I wouldn't be bucking the trend on this one, because I think those defensive sectors will weather the storm fairly well if there's any correction in valuations due to rising interest rates.
More broadly, I guess, Mark, as far as the telco sector is concerned, what's your outlook there? And I guess a lot of this also may well depend on where the immigration rate goes, and you're seeing that growth. I mean, obviously, that's a longer term story, but that would be significant demand right there.
Yeah, look, I think we're seeing a lot more, sort of split work from home and things like that. I think communications will be fairly solid. As you said at the start, it's not the most unbelievably exciting stock or sector. But people need their communications, their internet, their phones, etc. So, whilst yielding fairly well, I think it's a solid part of a portfolio for now.
Okay, all right. Yeah, Chris, so obviously it does have an attractive dividend. Plus, I guess when we look at, the work from home thematic, it's not going away, clearly. So is Telstra one to pick on this? Or, I mean, Mark's obviously mentioned others. So how are you looking at it?
Yeah, so we've been holding this one since the early threes, Andrew, and I agree with Mark that I'd like to pick up more at 380. I'm just not convinced that we'll be given the opportunity. So probably a bit more bullish on it. Andy Penn reiterated last time out that the company is on track to grow earnings for the first time since 2017. Their mobile division, which is we all know is a massive driver of their earnings, saw a 3.7% increase in revenues. And the NBN issues are really starting to subside. And let's not forget that was a $3.5 billion headwind, which is now almost complete. Add to that, they have built some assets and their competitive advantage in regional areas of Australia. And they're well ahead, well and truly ahead in terms of 5G infrastructure, 4,000 mobile sites. And at the Investor Day in November, they've reaffirmed all their targets out to FY25. So if they can deliver on them, don't get me wrong, that's always been an issue for Telstra, but if they can meet those targets that they have reiterated quite recently, I think the share price can keep going a little bit longer. I wouldn't be surprised, over the next 12, 18 months that this is around $5. So, we'll probably be happy to hold it. Again, don't disagree with Mark, though. There's probably more exciting, more growth prominent names within this space. But, it serves that purpose in our portfolio. As we know, it's got a reasonable yield, and I think there'll be some capital growth there as well.
Okay, so you're holding it. Any particular names that you would consider, as Mark mentioned there, maybe United Wireless or Aussie Broadband?
There's actually nothing else in the telco space that we own, Andrew, in our portfolio. Okay. So it's just Telstra, yeah.
Yep, fair enough. Okay, that is Telstra. I should mention too, it is already in our portfolio, and given both Chris and Mark have a hold on it, it stays in the portfolio. All right, to our fifth stock, Ben, wanting to know about WAM Capital. It is a listed investment company. Had a market cap of some $2 billion. It's now also making a bid for its Pacific Opportunities Fund, PAF, and that's a recommendation there that they've accepted pretty much. Shares went nowhere really in 2021, although once again has paid out a generous dividend. Chris, your thoughts on WAM?
There's really not much more to add to what you just delivered, Andrew. I mean, it's right. Fit for purpose, really. It's a good yield, 7% per annum. The performance since 99 is north of 16%, so that is fantastic. As you say, it literally opened and closed at the same price in 2021, no capital growth whatsoever. The NTA barely changed either, but that's not why you hold this one. You know, this one does what it says on the box, 7% yield and a grossed up yield of around 10%. And just looking at the names that WAM Capital holds, so, you know, there's some names there, 360, for example, Aristocrat, ARB, AX1, which is Accent Group, Breville Group, PMV, Premier Investments, PEXA. You know, these are all names that we have either have now or have had in our growth portfolio as well. Just looking at the way they research stocks seems to be a parallel to, you know, some of the stocks that we hold that have done very well for us as well. So, you know, I like the vehicle. I like the underlying companies which WAM Capital invests in. And as long as you know what you're buying, you know, you're not expecting the share price to go from $2.23 to $5 and you're happy with that yield, then, as I say, it's fit for purpose.
All right. Yeah, so as you mentioned, they're pretty much matching your growth portfolio. So what do you do with it? If you're not into it,
if you're looking for that yield and you're not looking for capital growth and you're comfortable with that, then this is a buy. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Mark, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I fairly much echo Chris's sort of sentiments on it. One thing I'm also going to give it a buy as well, is more so looking to be a touch more defensive this year. One thing I look back on, their performance from 99 through 2009, where we had sort of three odd black swan events, they outperformed the market. And not to say that there's some, you know, former black swan event coming up, but the they're quite agile and they do pretty well in markets where conditions change quite quickly. So where they're being worries about inflation and they're being, you know, obviously going back into a non, you know, zero rates environment, it's a fund manager that I would lean towards, or a listed investment company that I'd lean towards on the back of their track record of being able to shift and outperform pretty well. They're sort of pretty similar to a few of the managed fund companies last year. They perhaps cashed out a little bit too early, which is why they didn't get too much capital growth. But exactly what Chris said as well, there's a lot of names in their holdings that, you know, we have similar, that that fit a lot of really good filters, really good companies. So I think it's actually probably will have a better year this year in a market that potentially is a bit more range bound and not just blindly rallying on the back of the smell of an oily rag. So I think these more astute investors or value investors, say like Challenger and Perpetual, will do fairly well this year.
All right. So, but you're saying this is perhaps the pick of those LICs then?
Yeah. Look, I like the way they performed in a market with shifting thematics. It doesn't seem that they tend to underperform by the looks of things when the market is sort of is on a fairly is trending, but when we have shifts or movements in major macroeconomic thematics, they seem to be able to move quite quickly and do quite well. So I think they'll do pretty well this year.
Yep. Okay. Well, given you have both slapped to buy on WAM Capital, that is going in our portfolio. So well done on that front. One to consider clearly if you're looking for an investment opportunity. All right, that's our first five. Let's summarize then where we've been. We began with our stock of the day, of course, which was Latitude, and it's a play just as far as some of the assets of Humm is concerned, particularly in the buy now, pay later space, both referring to the consolidation in that space. Mark, though, saying you pretty much need to wait to see how this plays out. He's got a hold. Chris pretty much reflecting that also, saying has been struggling. In fact, both businesses essentially struggling, so he's got a hold on it as well. Our first pick was Live Hire. You would think perhaps in this current environment where people are looking to hire, a human resources platform would be doing well. Although both can't really see where the opportunity is at this moment, particularly with expansion into the States. So it's an avoid for both on Live Hire. GrainCorp. Well, look, we've seen soft commodities, grains in particular, do very well just over the past year or so. Although Mark's saying it is well past its price target, he's got a trailing stop on it. Essentially, he's got a hold, but some a lighten on the stock. Chris saying, look, it's clearly likely to benefit even more just as far as crop yields are concerned because of La Nina. We're seeing lots of green around the country, so that's a benefit. So he's saying it could kick on. He's got a hold on it. ProPak Packaging. Look, once again, back to that issue, just as far as where we're at with COVID and e-commerce, and I guess you'd expect that packaging companies would be doing well. But Chris just pointing out some of these supply chain constraints, it's a negative. He's got a sell on it. Mark saying that thematic is solid, but it's got a poor short-term outlook. He's looking perhaps for a pullback to get into it. So he's sort of wavering between, I guess, a hold and a sell on that stock. Telstra, should mention it is already in the portfolio. It is a defensive play. Mark saying he wouldn't buy at these levels, but he does have a hold on it. Likewise for Chris, a hold. So it does stay in the portfolio. And finally there, WAM Capital. That's certainly a positive and that has that attractive yield on it. In fact, Chris saying it is pretty much reflects Marcus today's growth portfolio. It's a buy, and Mark also agreeing there. He has a buy on WAM Capital. So that goes into the portfolio. So there are our five. All right, let's move on then to our sixth stock. And this one is Lynch Group Holdings. Tyler wanting to know about this. Now, in fact, fairly tightly held. The Lynch family is, in fact, cashing in on half its holding, though the offer, I think the company's around 100 years old. But it still holds close to 15% of the group. It supplies flowers, bouquets, floral arrangements and the like to some of the leading supermarkets around the company, plus Bunnings and the likes of David Jones. So, Mark, are you into flowers? Look, you know, if you want to do the right thing by the wife, clearly you're buying flowers at some point, aren't you? But how do you feel about this company?
Yeah, look, if I want to be popular at home, it's the obvious choice. But look, it's firstly, just preface this with this stock's incredibly thin and doesn't trade a hell of a lot of volume. So, look, it's a fairly solid business. It, as you said, it's been around for forever. The labour shortage easing is going to be a good thing for it. I read a few bits and pieces from analysts saying, look, supply chain issues easing could actually increase competition for this company. So they've got a really solid supply chain, and they're obviously in China at the moment. We're expanding over there, so that'll be great for long-term growth. So I think at the moment they've probably knocked out, a few of their competitors have been knocked out over this pandemic period. So I don't mind the company. I think the outlook's pretty rosy for it. PE ratio is pretty good for in sort of sector comparable. I'm pretty reluctant to get in something that you might struggle to get out of. If you're a long-term believer, then but I think there's probably better opportunities elsewhere. I'm really reluctant to get involved in super thin stocks.
Yep. Okay. That's pretty much an avoid. But I like your rosy outlook. That was nice. all right, Chris. Does it have a rosy outlook enough to the point where you'd actually consider it?
Well, I'll tell you what, Andrew. I had, must confess, never heard of this company until I saw it on the run sheet for today's segment. So clearly, I'm not very popular at home. But in terms of the opportunity, I was reading some research notes on it, and there, it's probably not the company doing this, but everyone was banging on about the opportunity in China and that the market is 13 times the size of that in Australia, and it's highly fragmented, and they're trying to cut out wholesale layers and this and that and blah blah blah. Two companies that I've seen carry on like that: A2 Milk and TWE. And look where they are now. So I'm getting a bit sick and tired of companies talking about this China opportunity. I'd rather just see them deliver. And they haven't been able to do that just yet. And the share price, again, looking at the last year, has really gone nowhere. So, until this one starts to move, until it starts to deliver on that promise, I don't see any reason why you would want to invest in it. And then, Mark tells me that it's thinly traded as well. And I 100% concur. Don't want to be getting into a stock which you might struggle to get out of if it goes wrong or even if it goes right. So, this is an avoid for me.
Right, that's two avoids then. But it doesn't mean you can't be buying flowers. certainly from anywhere, any one of those supermarkets, regardless, I guess, of where they source them from. All right. Now, we've spoken about e-commerce earlier, obviously, and how that's played out over the course of the pandemic. Temple & Webster, obviously one of the beneficiaries to a point. Carlos wanted to know about this one. Had the tailwind there, obviously, of consumers shifting to buying from home products online. In fact, a UBS thinking that it could make useful acquisitions to boost its growth potential. Now, interestingly, also, perhaps where it differs from other e-commerce in that it runs a drop shopping model. Essentially, it means that products are sent directly to customers by suppliers. That means faster delivery times, but also avoids it holding inventory. And we saw the issues that caused, particularly for the likes of Kogan. Chris, your thoughts?
Yeah, just picking up on that point, Andrew, I quite like this model. Basically, they are just a marketplace. And the exchanging of goods and money, of course, runs through them, but is then done externally between the purchaser and the seller. So, normally I'd like to see a good looking chart in order for me to be a buyer. This chart doesn't look particularly good over the last 12 months. I mean, it was a market darling there for a while. It rose from $2 in January 2020 to $14 in October 2020. So, yeah, as we can see there on the chart up on the screen now, had this incredible run and has really gone sideways since. But even though the chart doesn't look that appealing right now, I do kind of like this one. It does have a dominant position in its space. Things are improving coming out of COVID and out of lockdown. So repeat orders have risen to 50%, order frequency up 7% compared to pre-COVID. And the average order value is up 6%. And it will continue to benefit, as you said, Andrew, from that shift to online spending, particularly in the furniture and homewares category. So, yeah, while the chart isn't screaming at me, there's enough fundamentally there, I think, to like. Again, I'd probably just want to see it turn a little bit higher. It's on about $10 support at the moment. Probably needs to trade up through 11 and show a little bit of bullish momentum before I can justify my technical needs to jump into this one.
Yeah, okay. So a potential buy, but certainly not yet then. That's fair enough read from you. Mark, what are your thoughts there?
Look, it's one of these, it's a bit of a conundrum because I really like the business. I agree with Chris there. The market's only about 10% furniture online. They're doing some interesting stuff with augmented reality to help shoppers. The dropship model is really smart as well. It just reduces a hell of a lot of risk in terms of the company being caught with inventory, etc. PE's at 100 though, and I really struggle. I'd be selling this on stop through $10. I think it's what the companies with these massively elevated PEs, like I think you're going to struggle a little bit this year, just generally. It's more so the broader thematic, really, that the I don't think you're going to be able to survive on a promise of growth of 20% a year for the next decade. Justify your share price. I think there's just a little bit too much risk in it at the moment. But like I said, having said that, I'd be any sort of significant drop in it, it'd be certainly something I'll be having a look at, because I do like the business overall. But I think at these prices, they're pretty much nothing's got to go wrong at all for them for the foreseeable future. Perhaps an acquisition changes that. But at this stage, it's dropped below the 200-day moving average, which I don't see as very favourable as well. So, like, I wouldn't be selling it, but I'd be if it started to drift any further from here, I'd be a little bit worried about it. Having said that, I like the business model. I like the business. It's just a little bit rich.
Yeah. So, but you're saying this sort of applies to its competitors as well, and that perhaps. We've seen the best of this, certainly as far as e-commerce is concerned, and obviously the tailwinds, as I mentioned there, across COVID.
Yeah, look, I think it's going to be one of those years where you've got to prove yourself. When the market's had a rally like it's had for the last 18 months, there's a lot of faith in there being some tailwinds behind you when you're buying. I think these guys will. It'll. I think you'll basically sort of start to see that those white hot stocks, start to hit some reality. So, yeah, like I said, like the business, it's not. But I at this stage, I'm not looking at stuff with PEs around these massively elevated levels.
All right, that is Temple and Webster. All right, to our eighth stock, CSL Jones. Wanting to know, should I buy into the share purchase plan? Just to explain then that it's recently announced an institutional placement to raise $6.3 billion, I think, to purchase Vifor Pharma out of France. Of course, it is the global biotech as a biggie on the local exchange, although has had its issues during COVID, particularly as far as that reduced foot traffic, I guess, as far as its plasma collection centres are concerned. So, Mark, you want to consider there, certainly as far as this massive acquisition that it's making. So how is this playing out, do you think, for the business?
Yeah, look, our sophisticated investors participated in the institutional raising. I'm more than happy to take up the SPP. They underperformed last year. There was probably a big opportunity for them to really kick on, and they didn't really deliver on the vaccines, etc. Blood plasma obviously was another issue, but I think we'll obviously with the easing of all these, particularly in the US, the employment benefits and some states just have already removed them. You'll sort of start to see those plasma donations increase. Look, investing in aging. The increase in liver disease and dialysis, etc. I think it's a really good acquisition overall. It is an elevated sort of PE, but this is a massive acquisition overall. So I'm really impressed with how it bounced out of that 273 area on the cap raise, because that was what the second. I think Telstra was the only one bigger than that in history in Australia, and we managed to jump sort of about 7 or 8% straight out of it, which is super positive price action. Normally you would expect the market to have to spend a lot of time digesting that sort of volume, and it was pretty much 3 or 4 days and it drifted up. So look, I'm a buyer anywhere from here down to where obviously the cap raise price was around the low 270s. I think in conditions, it's gone sideways for you. I think conditions will improve for it overall. And I think the Vifor, I don't think you can go too far wrong investing in obesity and aging from a healthcare sense, and healthcare being defensive as well is sort of something we're looking to add anyway. So, it's a buy from me.
Yep. Okay. As you're saying, given the aging demographic globally, makes sense in that regard. Chris, you look at that share price. In fact, since the beginning of the pandemic, it sort of hasn't moved at all.
No, it hasn't, Andrew, but that doesn't worry me. Again, I'd echo a lot of what Mark just said. Obviously, we can't give personal advice to Jones, but I can say, like Mark said, that for our clients that hold CSL, we'll be participating in the share purchase plan. So it's about the most ringing endorsement I can give. I think the pandemic has shown the management at CSL that having all of their eggs in one basket carries risk, even if they are the best at it. And as Mark articulated, plasma collections took a big hit in the US with people stuck at home. Whilst diversifying away from CSL's core competency carries risk and has some analysts worried, the Vifor suite of products is, it's very strong market positions, lots of growth opportunities. And if I was going to back anyone in terms of a management team to consummate the deal and extract synergies and do all the things that they want to do, I'd back the CSL management team. So I, again, like the deal and would be a buyer as well.
All right. That is interesting because it's actually not in our portfolio at the moment. So it means it goes in. That is CSL, given particularly where its share price is sitting right now. Okay, let's move on then to Winsome Resources. Now, it's had a recent IPO, in fact, spun out from Metals Tech. Now, Adam asks, he's saying that its managing director has a strong record in delivering lithium projects. He says it's well funded, has at least one, possibly three decent resources in a safe jurisdiction, low capex options to fast track its lithium into a high demand market. We know what's happening there. He says he's acquired some shares as part of the recent spin out. His point of view, it looks like blue sky from here. Goodness. Do you guys agree, given where its share price is at the moment? Chris?
I don't have a lot to add here, Andrew. Adam has seemingly summed it up nicely. The chief executive that they've just put in has significant experience in Quebec, which is where these lithium deposits are. But let's not forget that this is an explorer. They still need to prove that they have the resources in the ground. And then we mustn't forget that it's anywhere from 3 to 6 years between proving those reserves, raising capital, building a mine around it, extracting the stuff out of the ground and selling it. And the best example of that, of a company that's gone on that journey recently and is really starting to hit straps is Liontown, which is also a lithium play. So it's in the right space. It seemingly has some decent resources worth getting after and examining more. Seems to have the right people in place. But let's not mistake this one is going to be driven by news flow and the fact that they can prove that what they think is in the ground is actually in the ground. And until we get confirmation of that, this one, probably bounces around a little bit. And, that's just not a space that I want to play in. So it's an avoid for me, but not from the context of I think that there's anything wrong with it. It just needs a lot more water to pass under the bridge to prove to me that it's worth throwing some money at.
Yeah, interesting, particularly, I guess, where these lithium companies have been going in recent times. As you've pointed out, Chris, we know what it's being used for and that demand. But, of course, there's a lot of lithium in the ground. It's just a matter of tapping it. So are there any other companies you're considering in this space at the moment over Winsome?
Yeah, so Liontown Resources, the one that I just spoke to, is one that myself and Henry Jennings, friend of the show in particular, has made quite some significant money for our clients out of. And Min is the other one, Mineral Resources, which has lithium in its suite of products as well. So there's two right there that I would probably put ahead of Winsome Resources. And again, not because there's anything wrong with this opportunity, it's just that they're further down the road in terms of extracting the lithium and then, of course, selling it for a profit.
Yeah, because as you say, there's that longer timeline. Mark, how are you looking at this at the moment?
Look, I completely echo Chris's thoughts on this. I run the more active sort of clients at Macro, and I've got a day trading background as well. But So for my more active clients who like to get involved in speculative things, this is one that has got all the good ingredients, really. It's in a really hot thematic. It's just IPO'd. So, look, there's, you know, it's probably got 6 months, you know, 3 to 6 months before it reports, where there can be a whole range of speculations. And I think something like, I mean, we've been long PLS and Mineral Resources for probably the last 3 or 4 months. And recently sort of we're pretty much out. I think we're completely out of PLS now. It's rallied since the 21st of December, like something like 40%, which is really, you know, it's really extreme. But that just shows you how white hot the thematic is at the moment. So it's not one for an investment portfolio. If you for an investing portfolio, we will avoid explorers pretty much just as a general rule. But you know, for your more active clients, who you know, it's more of a trading stock, a speculative buy, because as Chris said, it will run on rumors and thematics and just sort of follow the lithium price around. Look, it does have great management. There's, I think, three on the board there with lithium mining experience and a decent track record. It's Hard Rock Lithium. It's in a really good jurisdiction in terms of the US is trying to really shore up strategic assets in terms of that sort of EV or battery and energy thematic. So look, it's in the right spot. It's not an expensive, the hard lithium's not expensive to mine. But as Chris said, it's 3 to 6 years before production. I mean, it'll just basically trade on thematic and for the foreseeable future. So it's probably one for the traders rather than the investors.
Yeah, okay. So I'll call it an avoid, but I guess if you're looking for a speculative buy, then that might fit right there. Okay, yeah. Let's get to our final stock. It's Servcorp. Riley wanted to know about this. It is about serviced offices. You know, once again, this is about what's going on with COVID, and we know the work from home thematic and how that's played out. It has been hit in that regard. But its last financial results, it said when the pandemic ends, flexible workplaces will be more important than ever. So, Mark, just wondering how then Servcorp fits into this picture, just as far as obviously there is significant pressure on offices at the moment. How's it work for Servcorp?
Yeah, look, it is a bit of a tricky thematic. Because I would have thought as well, just there's a little bit of a labour shortage playing into this as well. It's incredibly hard to find staff at the moment. And I guess part of the service is, I've actually had personal experience with this, being involved with the startup. In the past, we've actually used Servcorp services, and you get a nice address, you get some nice meeting rooms, etc. Someone answers the phone with your company name. And I think that sort of thing, look, if you've got more, as some companies are looking to reduce their, you know, their actual office footprint, and they're struggling to find admin staff, they're struggling to find, you know, and that will, or they don't want to pay up for that lower skilled staff, I think it might play into Servcorp's hands. Look, it's got a pretty decent yield as well. The price is fairly favourable overall in the long term. It's got a reasonable trend to the upside. So it's sort of sitting around the 200-day moving average here at the moment. I would expect, you know, there could be improving conditions. I'd be happy to buy it here at the moment, just on the back of the yield and in terms of where the price, I guess, the price opportunity is. So I would say that the conditions are going to improve for them. But I think you need to be ready to be able to, you know, if the trend is that people are just going to start working from home a hell of a lot more, or if labour conditions start to improve, I think you probably want to be swift to get out of it.
All right. Okay. So a tentative buy, perhaps, from you. Chris, yeah. Your thoughts?
Again, I would echo a lot of what Mark just said. I mean, technically, I like the pullback that we've seen into this 350, 360 level where there is some support. Mark just said it's around the 200 moving average. So that makes sense. And we have seen a bit of a bounce off of that level. They reaffirmed their FY22 guidance in November and noting those improved conditions again that Mark was talking to. And I like this idea. I like this thematic moving forward of flexible working spaces. I think the work from home idea and theme is intact, but is it really work from home or is it work from suitable locations that you like where you have the flexibility to move in and out? Some days at home, some days in the office, some days in satellite offices, some days in head offices. I think the work environment from all of us for all of us moving forward is going to be far, far more flexible than it ever was pre-COVID. And that plays into Servcorp's hands. And it is undoubtedly a recovery play. It is highly leveraged to improving market dynamics and lockdowns ending and mobility and all of those things. So again, I quite like it. I think probably label it as a tentative buy as well, Andrew.
All right, that's interesting. So tentatively goes into the portfolio consideration.
Probably be the best performer over the next 12 months.
Well, let's see, shall we? All right. Okay, that brings us to the end. Let's just sum up those last five stocks that we explored. Lynch Group, this is about flowers and bouquets that you buy at your local supermarket. Mark, pretty concerned about this because it's thinly traded. It's also looking at expansion in China. He's got an avoid on it. Likewise from Chris there. Certainly that rings alarm bells, I think, for Chris just as far as the China story because he mentions, obviously, TWE and A2 Milk and what's happened in that space. Temple and Webster, obviously beneficiary as far as e-commerce is concerned. Chris likes the fact that it's just a marketplace, likes the business model. It's a hold, also a hold there from Mark. He likes the business, but perhaps seeing challenging times ahead. CSL, the biggie, and it is a buy from both, particularly its acquisition of V4 Pharma, which is a good diversity as far as both of their concerns. So it goes into the portfolio. Winsome Resources, once again, we do this quite a bit, these emerging explorers, just as far as lithium is concerned. It's based its business in Canada, in Quebec, but it's an avoid from both, although Mark's saying it is a speculative buy if you're wanting to be a bit specky at this. And finally there, Servcorp, once again, when we're exploring what's going on with COVID and particularly office space, Mark saying he's used it. In fact, it has a decent yield too. He's got a tentative buy, as does Chris, a tentative buy on Servcorp. So shall we say it goes into the portfolio then. All right. Thanks to our experts today, Mark from Macro Capital and Chris from Marcus Today. Guys, thanks very much.
Thanks for having us.
All right. So if you'd like us to cover any stocks that you can think of, flick us an email, thecall@ausbiz.com.au or tweet us at AusbizTV. And a reminder where to find the stocks we have in the Call's portfolio, you can head to ausbiz.co/portfolio.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.